Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island, pairing beer and music since 1988. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago, Illinois. Listen critically, enjoy responsibly.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we are all about that bass. That bass, Greg. You know, the guitarist and the lead vocalist, they always get the spotlight, all the attention. The guitarists get the solos. But there is no such thing as a great band without a great rhythm section. Drums, we gave the drummer some a while back on Sound Opinions, and bass. You know, what's special about those four strings is it is the rhythmic foundation on which the entire song is built. But a great bassist can also really sneak his or her way into your head with something that's very melodic. And I'm so excited. Later in the show, we're going to give some of our favorite super memorable bass lines. But first, we are going to talk to one of the all-time masters of that instrument, James Alexander.
That's just a taste of Soul Finger, the 1967 breakout hit for the Memphis soul and funk band, the Barqués. On the bass is James Alexander. Now, the Barqués played a pivotal role in Stax Records' studio system, eventually replacing Booker T and the MGs as the primary session band behind label bands like Rufus Thomas, Albert King, The Emotions, and Isaac Hayes. They were also consistent hit makers in their own right that charted throughout the 70s and 80s with jams like Holy Ghost and Son of Shaft.
Absolutely right, Greg. And speaking of Shaft, the Barqués were the backing band on Isaac Hayes' classic soundtrack. Released in 1971, Shaft won an Academy Award for the best score. It was the first to be awarded to an African-American composer. And this year, the original soundtrack was re-released in a fantastic new box set with almost two dozen previously unreleased tracks featuring the Barqués. So, we started our conversation with James Alexander by asking him what it was like to work with Isaac Hayes on such a celebrated recording.
Isaac Hayes was, at that particular point, he was so hot. He had three or four other albums under his belt at that point. So when he recorded Chef, I mean, he was just kind of like at the pinnacle of his career. We had no earthly idea that it would turn out like this. You know, here I am, a senior citizen. I was, just turning 21 in 1971. We're still talking about this thing.
Yeah.
So that's a testament to the music, a testament to Isaac Hayes along with David Porter. They kind of like took us under the wing and said, come on, guys, let's do something. You know, we didn't have no idea what we were doing, but we just knew that it was fun. I cherished all moments.
Who's the black private dick that's a sex machine to all the chicks? You're damn right.
You, the sessions, you know, and as I'm listening to all these extra tracks, these 22 additional tracks, it's mostly instrumentals. It mostly is Isaac Hayes performing, a multi-instrumentalist, a gifted man, as you said, playing with the Barqués in the studio and creating these incredible pieces of music, some of which was used in the movie.
Thank you.
had sort of honed that approach with Isaac on the road, right? You guys had played not only sessions with Isaac Hayes, but you had done a lot of live gigging with him before you got into the studio to make the Shaft soundtrack, right?
Right. Well, actually, when Isaac first started, Isaac used to play in nightclubs. And I remember years ago, we had a gig together for about a year because he had a band called Isaac Hayes and the Doodads.
Yeah.
And I was one of the Doodads. But we had a standing gig just across the bridge in West Memphis, Arkansas. And we played from 9 to 3, 6 nights a week. So we learned a lot of stuff during that time as well. We was just gigging. And I was still in high school, anyway.
And that's during that period, that's when Isaac was coming up with those long versions of those Jimmy Webb songs and things like that, right? Improvising with you guys by the time I get to Phoenix and things like that, that became these huge hits on R&B.
She'll laugh when she reads the part that says I'm leaving. Cause I've left that girl so many.
Back in those days, I don't even think he was thinking about anything like that. We were just trying to gig so we could make a little money, so we could just try to, feed ourselves back in those days, you know what I mean?
Right, sure.
You know, James, the history gets clouded so often, even in liner notes, much less Wikipedia. Was the story of a lot of that music you guys recorded, was it that it had started in L.A. and then moved to Memphis because they wanted some of that grit from Stax? Is that accurate? Do I have that right?
Well, let me explain it to you. First of all, number one, we were on tour during this time period.
Mm.
Isaac Hayes was on tour, and he took us on tour as the opening act, meaning the Bar K's. We actually kind of like begged him, say, "Hey, man, hey, would you take us on tour? Let us be your opening act. We're gonna be recording with you anyway." So he agreed to it, and he took us on tour. So what happened was, during the week, we were in L.A. working on the movie soundtrack, and on the weekend we were back on the East Coast doing concerts all up and down the East Coast. So we were flying back and forth. This went on for like 2.5 months, back and forth.
Yeah.
A lot of people obviously talk about Theme from Shaft, this incredibly lauded track that won an Academy Award. Isaac Hayes became the first African-American to win an Oscar in a non-acting category for that song. But then you had another single on that record that did pretty well, top 40 song, Do Your Thing, which was 19 and a half minutes long on the
right.
soundtrack. Obviously, they edited it down. But that's an example of what you were talking about, I guess, where, let's just roll the tape and see what happens, right?
Let's just roll the tape and see what happens. I mean, back in those days, a lot of that went on. Most of the music that we came up with just came up like that. Hey, we was just having fun. Like I said, we weren't really thinking about it that hard. We just knew that we could do what we do. Let's see what comes out of it.
Tell us about some of the music. There's an incredible amount of music that was recorded. Do you remember the moment the theme from Shaft was created and how that sort of came together in the studio?
The theme from Shaft, believe it or not, it all started. We had this guitar player that he was not in the Bar K's, but he was just an extra guitar player that always traveled with Isaac by the name of Charles Pitts. We called him Skip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Let's take it.
He started playing this wah-wah thing. You know, everybody started looking around and said, "What is that?" You know, Isaac jumped in on it and just started creating Cher from that. I remember him just hitting a whole note on the piano, you know, just over and over again. I mean, it was so repetitious. It got to be so boring because for look like long periods of time, it was just Skip playing this wah-wah and Isaac hitting this whole note. I said, man, where is this thing going? Mm. After, you know, several hours of working on it. You know, Isaac had this uncanny ability for just coming up with stuff like on the fly. I mean, he was just one of those unique guys that could just come to the studio and sit down at the piano and make magic happen.
I'm curious, what kind of direction? Because, you know, Isaac was a noted composer, arranger. Would he give you some ideas about bass lines at all, James? Or were you kind of left on your own devices to sort of respond to what was going on in the studio? How did that sort of evolve with all the musicians coming up with their parts?
It kind of worked both ways. I mean, sometimes he would give out parts, and then sometimes just, you know, just from instinct, you know, the musicians, myself included, we would just play something. He said, wait a minute, keep that right there. Don't change nothing. You know what I mean? It worked both ways. And sometimes he would give out a part, and that part would be, you know, it would be kind of wacky. So he said, okay, that doesn't sound right. Let me see what you can come up with. And then he, okay, I like that better. You know, it went back and forth like that. I mean, you know, It really was a situation where everybody was just really working together for a common goal.
You know, a lot has been written and said about how the Stax records came together. That, you know, people like Steve Cropper and Isaac Hayes, when he was alive, obviously, I had interviews with them where they were talking about this idea of head arrangements, where everybody was kind of in the room together and bouncing ideas off each other, and no idea was considered too outlandish. Let's give this a shot. Very different from the way records were being made in the bigger studios in New York and L.A., where it was very much about, here's the arrangement, here's what you need to play.
Right.
Did you sort of recognize that difference right away? I mean, that just seemed very natural for you guys.
The music that we created was so authentic. I mean, it was so raw. Think about it right then, and the next thing you know, you're playing it. That's spontaneous. I mean, you know, like our first song that the Bar K's recorded, we was playing this groove at a nightclub one night, and then we went to audition for Stax, and we was playing this little groove, and the president of the label said, "Hey, what is that you guys playing?" We said, "We don't know. It's just a little groove that we made up." He said, "I tell you what, just hold what you got." And he ran up in the control room. 30 minutes later, we had a song called Soul Finger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We were used to just, you know, just coming up with stuff just like, just right off the top of our head, and it's just, next thing you know, it's part of a record. the thing about getting older is, as you get older, you start to second guess yourself. When you're young, you just don't really think about it. You just do it. Next thing you know, you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Band the Barquets, we should mention how important they were in Memphis history. A lot of people think about the house bands in Memphis as being the key to that sound. Initially, Booker T and the MGs were kind of the band doing a lot of the sessions. But the Barquets sort of moved in there in the late 60s, right? James is kind of like the key backing band for a lot of the sessions as the Booker T and the MGs thing sort of started to break apart. Those guys started to going their own separate ways. And then there were like two incarnations of the Barquets, right?
We were kind of like the second string band to Booker T and the MGs. You know, as Stax continued to grow, you know, the workload for Booker T and the MGs was like great. We started getting the overflow.
Mm-hmm.
And to be quite honest with you, for instance, you know, Duck Don, who was part of Booker T and the MGs, was the bass player, the main bass player on a lot of the Stax records. He deliberately did not show up for sessions so I could get some work.
Wow.
That was amazing to me. I mean, you know, I remember being in a session and Cropper kept saying, well, who's going to play bass on this record today? Duck is not here. He said, oh, we got to use Nuck. That's my nickname, Nuck. So Duck and Nuck. And we don't, well, I can't say the rest of it. Don't give a blank.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I can't say the rest of it. But Duck deliberately didn't show up so that I could get in and start doing sessions on a lot of the Stax records.
That's mm-hmm. a rare kind of generosity in that competitive studio musician world.
Well, you know, Duck, he loved to play golf, so, you know, so every chance he could, you know, get to the golf course, he said, Nuck, you going to be around? I said,
yeah.
Yep, I'm going to be around. So, you know, he said, I'm out of here then. You got me covered, right? I said, yep, I got you covered.
In early December 1967, the music world was rocked by news of a plane crash near Madison, Wisconsin. Otis Redding, the Barquets members, Ronnie Caldwell, Phelon Jones, Jimmy King, and Carl Cunningham were all killed in that tragedy. You were the guy whose turn it was to get on the commercial flight. That's the only reason you weren't on that plane?
That's the only reason I wasn't on that plane. Everyone else was on the plane in the group. In fact, I don't know if you remember or not, there was one survivor.
Yeah.
Ben Cawley, who just recently passed away maybe 2 or 3 years ago. So he survived the plane crash, but everybody else died in the plane crash.
And you had to identify the bodies. I mean, what were you, like a hot 20 years old, right?
No, 17.
Oh, my God, man. How did Ben, who survived the crash, convince you to reform a new version of the Barquets and continue in music? There had to be a minute where you lost your friends. You know, this is the worst thing that could possibly happen. Did you ever think, I can't continue from this point?
Well, you know, I tell people this all the time. The Barquets were a group, you know, had wisdom beyond their, you know, years. When we were very young, we always said that if anything ever happens to one of us, whoever is left must carry on. Now, you know, that's something for a 16, 17-year-old person to say, but that's the kind of thinking that we were doing, you know, at a very young age. But I had no idea that I would be the one to carry on.
Mm-hmm.
That resonated in my mind. I couldn't let them down, you know what I mean?
Well, and with Shaft, you know, becoming, you know, one of the most lauded soundtracks of all time in any genre, it's kind of like, you know, you did them right, right?
Right. I mean, I hope they're looking down and saying, hey, James, job well done, you know, something, a pat on the back or something.
James Alexander, what a privilege.
Thank you.
That was Barquet's bassist, James Alexander. As always, we want to hear from you. What's your favorite slice of the Memphis soul sound? Leave a message on our hotline with your opinion and why at 888-859-1800. Coming up, Greg and I'll share some of our favorite bass lines and bass players. That's after the break on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. Like it was